Right. The point of all of this is that under the controlling principles of BMC and Muni Auction, SERF did not direct or control these method steps. And because SERF did not control or direct...
You're interpreting direct and control to mean no one else does anything, everybody else is just passive?
I'm not sure that's necessarily the case, but here, this is not a case where there's a contractual relationship.
It's undisputed what the user does, and it's undisputed what the middleman does. But I don't see that that necessarily negates control or direction.
I think this court in Muni Auction, Chief Judge Michel, said that the direction or control standard is effectively where the law would impose a respondeat superior type obligation. And that's clearly not the relationship between SERF and its and the end user, certainly. In fact, keep in mind that each of these claims require in the 651 GPS receiver and the 000 remote receivers.
Well, Muni Auction didn't say that's the only test, right?
I'm sorry?
Muni Auction said we see this as a similar situation as the respondeat superior. They didn't limit, didn't say there can never be direction and control without that test being met.
I think if that's the case, Judge Clevenger, then I think it does describe the mine run of cases. And I'm having a hard time seeing how SERF, under any principle of agency, under any principle of tort law, is responsible for the voluntary elective actions of
let's
not only the customers
act,
and
the only elective act was in the whole system, let's just assume for a moment, was the consumer flicking an on switch.
A little bit of a harder case. But again, if we're talking about the same instrumentation and we're just changing the facts, where all the consumer had to do.
Aren't we talking under the developing case law, which we only got two or three cases here, right? We're talking about developing case law. We're talking about what's the relative, what's the feel? What is the, it's clear that no one person is performing all steps, okay? The claim is written in such a way that it can't be, right?
Well, if that's the case, then that, I think, as BMC suggested,
is
a claim drafting problem.
Direction issue. If you can write a claim very easily to say that it's going to require three different players to contribute in order to have the method satisfied, that's easy. And what our case law is saying is you can't just write a claim like that that says there never can be direct infringement. So you need to ask, is there direction or is there control? And you say, well, what was going on in Muni Auction? How much... You know, what was happening? What was it that the auctioneer himself couldn't do? Well, the person had to decide whether they wanted to participate. Same as your case. The GPS guy has to decide to turn it on, right?
Right.
Okay. So in Muni Auction, he had to fire up his computer. Well, then he had to pick a browser because he had to connect up to the auctioneer, right? Then what he had to do was to select a security he wanted to buy. And then what he had to do was to put in a price he wanted to buy it for, right? Now, that's more quantum. If I'm sort of putting on a scale and weighing it, that's more activity than is required of your end user, your Joe GPS, the guy, right?
But I don't think it's different in kind, Your Honor.
Well, that's I think, what we probably ought to, at least from my perspective, that's what you ought to be talking about.
You know, I think that to be responsive to the comparison to Muni Auction, what you have here, and I think you have to back up to the customer server here for a second, because the customer has to make the determination that it's going to provide the data to the end user in the first place. And then assuming that's made in this case, then the end user has to, again, you know, I don't take my GPS unit out of my car and hook it up to my computer. But if I did, then I might decide or decide not to download this data. That's
right.
An elective action on their part.
Is the difference here, is it not, is that this whole system simply cannot operate, period, without the software and the technology that SERF has embedded in its communication to its customer and in the customer communication to the Joe GPS and what happens there. As an owner of your device, I can't alter. I can't make it work some other way. Right? I'm locked in to what's embedded in the method, if you will, by your client.
I'm not
totally controlled how this thing will be used. Not when it's going to be used, but how it's going to be used.
I'm not entirely sure, Judge Clevenger, that's an accurate recitation of the record. I can't cite you chapter and verse on that right now.
Well, you're in trouble, but if you can't, right? I mean,
I think the salient fact here is that the customer themselves has to do something. If they, I think the unit is still operable, but I think this court's decision in cases like ACCO Brands say that manufacturing a device that has the mere capability of doing something isn't enough. And if that's the case, then it certainly must be the case in the divided infringement context that where Surf is manufacturing chips, that's all we make, chips and chipsets. We don't make receivers. We don't make the units that go into the cars. In that circumstance, it's got to be something like the ACCO always and inevitably standard. And that's not what you have here.
Let me tell you what the problem is. The problem is you're arguing about all these cases, and you say, yes, this case said that, the other case says that. It may be that this is a new case, a new issue, and the issue is whether turning it on defeats a finding of direct infringement, turning it on and maybe entering small piece of data. As a matter of patent policy, why shouldn't somebody be able to draft a claim that includes as one of the steps, here's all the available information, and the last step is turning it on, turning the machine on, and that's done by somebody else. Why shouldn't that be patentable? That's really the question.
Well, if I'm to respond to that question, I think I need to disabuse you of the notion that all that has to happen here is that the user turns on the unit. That's not the case. Again, if you look at the record, and if you look specifically at 8770 was Mr. Pandy, 7984 is Global Locates Pratt, testifying that the customers don't just have to turn it on, but they have to hook it up, and they have to get an internet connection. That's important because not all of these units have wireless internet connections in them. You may very well have to put it into a wire into your computer to go get this, and then
who gives the consumer the instructions on how to do that? Is it in your instruction booklet in your package?
Well, Surf certainly doesn't provide end users with any instructions because we don't make the end units. So what we have here, I think, is on some level.
You have no control over what your manufacturer, whoever makes this unit,
none. Says. And there's nothing in the record that would suggest that, Judge Clevenger.
So, but where are we supposed to draw the line? That's the question. Assuming that the earlier cases don't answer this particular question, where's the appropriate place to draw the line?
Well, I think, Judge Dyke, this case is actually an easier case for drawing the line than Muni Auction or BMC, because you have not only one but two intervening actors. You have the Surf customer, which is the maker of the unit, the people who are maintaining the server, or the RIM in the case of the extraterritorial argument. And then you have the end user. And the end user, both of those people are making elections. And they are elections that are not, again, in the terms of the law, BMC, Muni Auction, direct, or they are not directed or controlled in any way by Surf. And so the line I would suggest...
That's just the question is whether providing the software and the method and telling their server exactly what to do if it's turned on or what the GPS machine should do when it's turned on, whether that's sufficient to constitute direction and control.
I think, Judge Dyke, then you can look to analogous areas of tort law. And you can use the analogy that is used in the Global Patent Holdings case, the district court case that was later affirmed by this court, where the district court said, yes, you may give them the keys to the vehicle, but you don't require them to start it up and drive it. I mean, there is an attenuated causation here under the law, and you wouldn't see that sort of causation recognized in the tort context. And this court has long said that patent infringement is a tort. If I can turn very briefly...
That goes a little too far on your causation argument, because you could have a situation where the last step was something of just turning a little dial that, you know, makes the thing readable. A little dial you have to turn to go from a blank screen to a clear screen. And in causation, tort causation, if you didn't have that step, you wouldn't have it.
But
I don't think that... Your argument there doesn't help me... deal with your response to Judge Dyke in terms of where we draw the line.
Well, perhaps I overspoke with regard to
different in this case, but right, the test we draw here has to deal with another series of cases that are going to come along.
Well, I think that the test you have to look to is, I mean, you already do have at least 2 points in your jurisprudence, and that being BMC and Muni Auction. And you, excuse me, do have a direct or control standard, which is derived from a long and rich history of tort law, in particular in the respondeat superior area. And in this situation, I think you have to ask yourself, if the element of a tort were the same three limitations or four limitations, depending on which claim we're talking about, would all four of those elements have been attributable to, in this case, SURF, by simply manufacturing the chip? The answer, I think, is quite clearly no in a case like this.